It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the 5-Year Plan Podcast. 523 is the number of this week's. And we are recording 2 days after Palace have won 1-0 at Anfield. A huge result for Palace, huge result for Oliver Glasner, and a huge result for us to discuss this week with Joe Walker. Joe, how are you?
Pretty good. 523, quite possibly the number of the weekend, given Oliver Glasner and Palace. I thought very fitting. Lovely stuff.
Beautiful. I really wish I'd written that in the intro. Jack Pearce, nodding along, is also here. How are you?
It was there for you, mate. It was all there for you. 5-2-3. But yeah, what a weekend. Let's get into it.
It was a tap in, but unfortunately, Dean Henderson kept it out, as he did many times.
Hey, I think it's right. I do think it's right that Joe had a profound thing to say there. I think it's right that Joe has some degree of input in the introduction of a famous Palace win this season.
It's the only way this season it was going to happen, wasn't it? To jump on somebody else's.
Absolutely. Let him nod it in. That's beautiful. Yeah, nicely played, Jim.
Yeah.
You were the Tyreek Mitchell to Joe Zebrichezza there.
Thank you very much.
One day, Joe. One day you'll get a win. Well, anyway, I'm looking forward to discussing it with both of you because a lot happened in the game and it was a lot of fun to watch. Before I do that, we are, of course, sponsored, like every episode this season, by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Make Green King your go-to destination for the season's final stretch. Why should you do that? Well, for one, you can watch every televised Palace game along with delicious food and refreshing beverages. A few coming up, I think. I don't know if is the West Ham game on TV? I think the Man United one is, isn't it?
West Ham not.
West Ham not. Okay, Man United is. And with 900 sports clubs dotted around the UK, chances are you're in walking distance of your local Green King. Let's be honest, guys. Watching football is way better with friends and family. So get the squad together for every televised Premier League fixture in an atmosphere worth sharing. That includes huge title showdowns, of which we had a hand in this weekend, the race for European qualification, which we will have a hand in next season, and a nail-biting relegation six-pointers, which hopefully we're now not in at all. And don't forget to download the Green King Sport app to enjoy exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there's a game on. Thank you to Green King for their support. Right. We do have questions, but I thought I would just open up by asking you both how you're feeling after that. That's a slight sort of this morning intro, wasn't it? How because it's a massive win for various reasons. It was one of those. It wasn't quite a smash and grab. What are me and Belly trying to work out in the post match? What we call less smash and grabs, more sort of like tap and take. But it was a classic Palace performance and a big 3 points. How are you? What are your feelings right now? A few days later,
you've got to ride your luck when you get a result against a title-winning side in their backyard, and we did. But there was enough about our own positive for us to be really pleased with the performance as well as the result. That's the way I'm kind of viewing it a couple of days on. Delighted with the result. Obviously, it has the impact upon our points tally, which I think probably does the job in terms of getting us further enough away from the bottom threes, particularly with the clubs between between us and the bottom three. But it's really more exciting about what could follow. I think the first half an hour in particular gave us a really clear indication as to what this manager wants to do. We saw Ebbs and Michael Lise play some lovely stuff. Mateta was a threat. Adam Wharton was superb. Joachim Andersen looked back to his best. Like, there were so many positives to take away from yesterday. I turned to my brother as we were watching it and I said, even if Liverpool do somehow squeak a or squeeze a 2-1 out of this, there's enough positives for us to take from this into the rest of this season and then into next. But actually, those 3 points do us the world of good in terms of this season. I was just ecstatic. I put a tweet out yesterday saying we as a fan base deserve that result, given where we've been at points this season. And I think Selzy said in Selzy Monday, like, those are the 3 points that we probably should have got, that we dropped at home to Luton, and then the point that we let slip away at Bournemouth. But actually, in some ways, I'd rather get those 3 points. If the net of those three games was going to be 3 points, I'd rather get the 3 points against Liverpool, derail their title bid, and give those fantastic away supporters the day that they had, let alone anyone watching on television or listening on the radio. So, yeah, just a great day for Palace, great day for the club. Some real standout performances that I'm sure we'll get into. But, yeah, absolutely delighted. And coming from Evertonian stock, it just meant a little bit more as well.
I've got a few tweets, not tweets, questions I'm going to read out to you, Joe. I said in the, I think Selzy Monday, feels like we haven't had a result like that for a long time. And then I saw a tweet or in the Discord groups reminding me that we'd obviously won at Old Trafford earlier this season. This is the first time we've ever won at Old Trafford and Anfield in the same season. That seems like years away, that game. Just feels like I'd completely forgotten it happened. Different manager, different time, different everything. I was a different person. But anyway, let me read out a few things. Dave Martin Williams says, how do we manage that? Didn't concede in the 90+2. These are the days that being a Palace fan is all about. Neil Steer says, was it ever in doubt? We were due one against Liverpool, and it's poetic that it's Klopp's last Liverpool loss. May well be against the same team as his first loss. Matt Baker says, great win, but now I've got to go and spend £350 in Costco before every game. Yes, you do. And Russell Levy says, is that the most typical Palace result ever? What do you reckon, Joe?
Is it the most typical Palace result ever? It ticks a lot of the boxes. I think all form points to that not happening. No away win since November. Yes, there's been a change of manager, but we've got still so many players missing. You then see the kickoff, the lineup announced now before kickoff. There is not a single person who saw Nathaniel Clyne at centre half and went, great, okay, we're ready for what's about to come. Let's remind ourselves, that's a centre back trio of Jefferson Lerma, Joachim Andersen, and Nathaniel Clyne. Nathaniel Clyne in 2024. And I just was ready to be hurt, as is the way usually at Anfield. For all this kind of stats about how we're the only team that's beating Klopp's Liverpool more than once, or whether or not that's true, and that's still over a 10-year period. It's absurd, actually, how few times they've lost in the league, certainly at home. So I just thought, here's another day. They've got all their mistakes out of the way in that Atalanta defeat. They're not going to be that sloppy again, surely. And it was a perfect storm of nerves on their side, I'd say, particularly in the first half. Just another extra week of work with the current management that just, everyone's just that little bit more confident in what their job is. Someone like a Will Hughes, who is grown into his responsibilities a lot more. Perhaps it was the game that suited him. But Michael Olise starts. You're aware you only have him for an hour, 70 minutes, but it does just change the way we approach the play in their half. And just that little bit more bravery and confidence. And suddenly, I thought that might go down as one of the better, that might be as good as you'll see us play against the side in the first half, against a big club at their place as well. It wasn't we could have been free up, which is, I know that's a sort of throwaway thing you might hear on TalkSport at 1 a.m. after a game, but the Mateta chance, there was just a couple in the first half, and of course he had another one in the second, but I thought we really took it to them, played it perfectly. All the stuff that has worked for us under Glasner has been pressing high, winning the ball back, and that's where all our goals are coming from. We took the lead again, as we do under him. But what was just incredible was that the inevitable, quote-unquote, breakdown of fitness and confidence and defence actually just never came. Really resolute defending. Some subs that drew a lot of laughter online, but actually was senior experience and just that little bit marginal gains, a little bit of actual real professional experience to come on the pitch, and it helped get us over the line. We were still knackered, don't get me wrong, but I have not gone away there thinking, bloody hell, how did we get away with that? They did have some big chances. I think Jones was the big one that they really should have taken. For the most part, we're talking like big blocks by Mitchell, by Klein.
Four XG Liverpool.
Yeah.
At the end of the game.
Really?
Big chances. Big chances.
We had over two.
Yeah.
So, you know, like we were in the game. Right. Certainly in the first half, we were so impressive. And your life as a Palace fan, you go, this is too good to be true. You know, we've really given ourselves a great account here, but, you know, it will pass. We'll get hit with a sucker punch. And it just didn't come. And I'm so delighted, not just for the club and the players. The people that went on Sunday, they're all nutters, I think, given what's been served up this season. To go on a Sunday like that, when it's on telly, against a team like Liverpool, Liverpool actually fans, I think, praised them a lot for how they conducted themselves around them in its silence beforehand. And
yeah.
I think we're not really one of those that goes to the tragedy chanting necessarily, because I just think we've got a longer hymn sheet, I think. We've got enough of our own songs. And I think I saw praise for that from Liverpool fans, that we never went there, which is low praise, I guess, a low standard, but that's football. But we went there, and everyone that went there got the good performance, and not just the result that their kind of commitment deserved. I was really chuffed for everybody. That was just a great day to be a Palace fan.
It was the best first half display against a top three team since last Saturday, which I think shows how far we've come. There's a lot of questions about Glasnable. Ian Matthews says, has Glasnable arrived in earnest? Daniel J. Edwards, is it luck, or has the Austrian started to... I don't like calling him the Austrian. Has Glasner, sorry, started to develop something very special? Nice to see him using all the players at his disposal. And says something disparaging about the previous regime, which I won't say. Charlie Dodd, for me, the biggest difference between this win and a win at Anfield in the past is the threat we carried all the way through. Are we seeing the Glasner effect starting to have an impact already? I'd say yes, 100%. I think, Jack, we've talked about that in previous weeks, that you've, even in some of those disappointing results, we've seen this system come into effect. First half against City, we definitely saw it, that high press in packs, trying to turn the ball over quickly in their final third. It was exactly the same here. A strong start, going at it, and then seeing what happens. Obviously, against City, their quality showed, but, you know, Sunday was an example of the fact that actually, if you do that, there are chances for you to hang on. I didn't realise their XG, well, it's not a surprise that their XG was so high. It felt like a 3-3 and a 4-4, didn't it? It felt like one of those games. But if you're in those games, if you give yourself a chance in the Premier League, you can walk away with a point. Are you starting to see a bit of Glasner ball come into effect?
Yeah, I think in view of those questions, something that Joe's just said is really pertinent, because it's the bravery on the ball, and there's no better example than the goal. Some balls back into the centre of the pitch, whereas maybe we'd have recycled it by going back through the centre halves again. Adam Wharton is part of that. I think he's calm. He provides a calmness on the ball. And actually, I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, but I also thought Will Hughes added to that yesterday. I thought his use of the ball and what he has in his locker is an ability to actually make himself space with a drop of the shoulder. And I know he hasn't got the engine to get around the pitch as much as, you know, you would want from a Premier League midfielder, but he is tidy. He does look after the ball well. So the fact that Wharton and Hughes are in the middle of the pitch, they're able to move the ball onto, you know, perhaps bigger threats in terms of Ebbs, Michael Olise, and then, you know, through the middle, Jean-Philippe Mateta, who, you know, again, gave Virgil van Dijk and Ibrahima Konate difficult games yesterday. Not many strikers have done that this season. I guess you are seeing what some might consider to be Glasner ball. But it's that bravery on the ball that then presents itself in creating chances. And if you are going to get something for Anfield, you've got to go. You can't just defend the whole game, because as we saw, even when there's a team defending, they're still creating chances because they've got such good players. So the fact we were able to kind of exert our dominance in the first, or in passages in that first 30 minutes, and could have been 2-0 up, other than for a wonderful goal line clearance from Andy Robertson. I think you are seeing a difference from this manager compared to previous, and you know, that won't be everybody's opinion, but that's mine. That's not to say that the previous manager was doing everything wrong. I didn't think that either, but there are differences. The same with any manager, the better player they have available to them, the better the football they're able to put out. And I think we're seeing that with Michael Olise coming into the team straight away and starting a game at the soonest opportunity for Glasner, but limiting his minutes. And temptation might have been there to keep him, to keep Elise on, just to give us a threat. And he didn't. But then he took Ebbs off again for the second week running and reverted to a more defensive set of players. Yeah, there's a pragmatism to him that I like. And again, for the second week, we had Brackers on last week, and he advised us of the kind of feeling in the press room after games is that this isn't a manager or a coach who is going to single out one player. He is going to kind of refer to the team as one. And I think questions were asked of him pre and post match in terms of Ebbs and Michael Elise, because of the profile that those two players have currently. And his answer was fairly rigid in terms of, yes, those players are great, but they're great because of X, Y, Z. And I think he singled out a few other players, as Bracker's indicated that he did before and after the City game. So, yeah, there's some positive things to see. As we said previously, the points hadn't come. Some of the performances were a little bit underwhelming. Some of the decisions had been a little bit confusing. But yesterday, you have to say, is a really solid indicator that that there's some promising times ahead with this manager, and a very interesting pre-season for him to oversee.
It is going to be an interesting summer. I think excitement, potential future excitement, seems to be the overriding feeling as well, certainly from some of our patrons. Joe, the goal, eerily similar to that Townsend goal at Anfield from three or four years ago, which was a 4-3 game. So, you know, maybe it's just something in the water between Palace and Liverpool. It's 21 passes. So I went back and watched it from one side of the pitch to the other. The six final passes were all one touch. It's not a goal that we're used to seeing from Palace, but it is a goal that we know they can do, especially when you do have Elise and Eze there. Talk us through what was going through your mind. I feel like interviewing a footballer post match. Talk us through what was going through your mind when you watched it, because again, it's not something we see that often.
No, I was kind of in not quite full disbelief, but it was just amazing to see it happen and play out in that setting against that opposition, really. I'm really trying to resist. I think it's easy for us as Palace fans to do so, but really trying to resist framing any of this as Liverpool kind of disappointing or being an off day. I think I want to take the match of the day too stance on this, which incredibly was just start to finish, how good was this Palace goal? How good were these players? And I think the goal is a great example of that. It's an excellent team goal. It's like really nice stuff from players that, as you say, they've got it in their locker. It's sometimes just about can it click in a way that works for us. I think, I don't know if it was a deliberate tactic, but Tyrone Mitchell, who ends up getting that assist, I did a couple of Liverpool podcasts and shows prior to the game as a sort of opposition fan's view. And my sort of big takeaway or headline I would give was, watch out for Munoz. Daniel Munoz is going to be anything that's going forward for us, probably going to involve him if it's positive and it works. And he's a bit of an unknown quantity still in the Premier League. I think it almost a decoy, because he was very rarely up past the halfway line on Sunday. It was Tyrone Mitchell, on the other hand, was really getting involved on that side of the pitch. And, you know, for all his sort of shortcomings that we say about him going forward, didn't see any of that on Sunday. He was excellent, and it felt like Ebbs had all the time in the world in the box, which was really strange. But it had all been the work of the passing prior to that from Elise. And I think the Wharton one in particular, that's almost the most impressive one, because he's not even looking, and it looked for a lesser player, you could be forgiven for going, maybe that's a blind pass that should be going out of play. But Mitchell appears from nowhere and he's naked of space, or maybe it's at least. But yeah, I loved it. It was very satisfying, and it put pay to the idea that we went there and were totally lucky, because we've gone there and scored probably one of the better goals they've seen in the last month or two at that ground. So
yeah.
Jim, the first 60 seconds though, you know, Joe's talking there about the nice play, but actually the first passage of play when the ball breaks to either team were on the front foot within the face. You just got a feeling like, oh, hang on a minute. I know it's only the first 60 seconds, but we seem to be at it and they don't seem to be at it. And they were so passive in parts. I mean, the midfield gaps that they had at points. I know people have said they've done really well to kind of create this new midfield when everyone left so quickly last summer, but you could see that is as a midfield that does still need work. And, you know, Van Dijk and Konate were often exposed, but we were just at it. And maybe we sensed that. Maybe we sensed the nervousness around the place, the fact that they got you know, thumped on Thursday night, albeit with a very different starting lineup, the mood around the place seemed to be a bit odd. And at this time of season, you know, we saw it again with Arsenal at the Emirates yesterday. Things matter more so at this time of season, despite the, you know, the points all being equal. A loss at this point of the season seems to hit harder than at any other time of the season. And you could sense it. And we really maximised the opportunity that presented.
Yeah, absolutely. They are going through a weird time, I think. But, you know, we maximise that, as you say. It was just... The Munoz thing's funny because I think that's the most defending I think I've seen him do. But obviously he was playing against his Colombian compatriot in Luis Diaz, and actually was kind of the perfect person to be up against him, because Diaz has been in fantastic form recently and is a brilliant, brilliant winger. But having someone that obviously knows his game really helped, and I think it did allow Mitchell. And I think Mitchell's going to get, my prediction is a mention in 3-2-1. And in fact, all the players you've said there, Wharton, Mitchell,
Jim, given that you have a claim 2-3-2-1, that's not the boldest of predictions.
That's true. I think I meant from you guys, but you're right. Actually, I could easily do that prediction and make it come true very, very easily. But yeah, it was an enjoyable. If you were neutral, that was a really enjoyable game because it was end to end with great football. And actually, as a fan of one of those teams, it probably wasn't quite as enjoyable. But being able to look back at it now, I think it's like a second 90 minutes of watching, being able to soak it in and be like, oh, that really was a good goal. And there were some really good patches to play for us. And yeah, we're a few inches away from a lovely second goal as well, with a good finish. And it could have been, you know, it could have been a real one for the memory books. But
how did you guys enjoy it? Because I found it excruciating. I really couldn't enjoy it at all, because it was giving, I thought the hope was, I didn't trust it at all. It was a really kind of, every time we would miss a big chance, I'd be telling, oh, there it is, you know, we're going to really regret that later, rather than just being like, well, we're taking them to town, taking them to task here. I was just miserable throughout the whole last sort of 80 minutes. I just hated it.
I think my enjoyment of the game was somewhat limited by Sky Sports' commentary of the game. That was quite something. I hadn't quite realised the Liverpool love it. I ignored the pre-match stuff, the Gump. I didn't watch any of that. I thought that was going to be very Liverpool. And apparently, according to a mate of mine, the only 2 minutes they gave us was about Michael Olise, to which they ended, how would Michael Olise fit in this Liverpool team?
So
even the Palace stuff still was geared towards Liverpool. But, you know, I know Seb Hutchinson has kind of commented, and I appreciate overseas listeners won't have heard this commentary. I appreciate he's got to paint a narrative, but it did sometimes bleed into just Liverpool TV and obviously Carragher on CoCom. So that limited my enjoyment somewhat, but I don't know, there was a degree of calmness, actually. I still wasn't worried, given Saturday's results. Saturday's results could have been worse for us.
Yeah.
So I wasn't feeling like we were being crept up on from behind, and it was still Palace going to Anfield, so anything, even if Liverpool had, you know, scored an equaliser with 10 to go and we'd held on for a point, it still would have been a really, really good point. And as I said, there were facets of that first half performance which, even at that point, I'd have taken the positives and thought, okay, there's stuff going into the West Ham game, the Newcastle game, Fulham, Wolves, there's positives here to build on. So I was actually quite relaxed. The frustrating bit came with instances like Mateta having the chance off the line, the save in the second half of Madison, although I suspect that might have been overall for offside, having seen another angle of it. But those moments, as you say, Joe, you're thinking, oh my God, 2-0 would be incredible here. But I just loved it. And I just, you know, really thought, I enjoyed it watching it with my parents. We're at my parents' house with my brother and my dad. You know, three of us really loved it. I'd just love to have been that away and just stay. And yeah, again, another shout out to everyone that made that journey yesterday. I just hope that will be one that sticks with you guys, that 3,000 or so, we'll just love every minute of it. And yeah, kudos to all of you that made that trip.
Yeah, I've done quite a few defeats. And I did the 5-0 Cup game in 2001, and that was painful. But never mind. That's what happens at Palace. You put in those miles, and at some point it pays off. And
the only way it could have been better would have been if it was Klopp's actual last game at Anfield. Like Gerrard's. Yeah. If we'd had Gerrard and Klopp's last games at Anfield, then... Yeah,
as our listener said, it could well be Klopp's last defeat at Anfield. So in a way, it's as close as we're going to get to the Gerrard one as well.
Can you drop the clip in here now, please, Jim?
Oh yeah, okay, all right. Yeah, I will.
Sometimes I would really like to change my personality, but I can't forget this fucking lose against Crystal Palace.
We're going to wrap up part one there. In part two, we got loads of questions, of course, from our listeners. So join us in a bit. Welcome back to the 5-Year Plan podcast, sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Loads of questions this week, as you can imagine. We're going to start with a question from David Radcliffe, 7161. I hope that's not his password.
That's his bank pin.
I think that might be his pin. Sorry, David. Anyway, is this result the result that ensures our safety next season? He goes on to talk about what a great win it was, but I'll just go straight in on that one. Joe, we did talk last week about the R word. And in fact, I did see some comments from people saying, oh man, if the midweek pod are really worried about it, then, because I think we all started Googling halfway through and we're like, oh, this could be bad. This is a big 3 points. It's now 8 points clear of third bottom with 6 games to go, which includes a game in hand. Are you feeling a bit more relaxed?
Luton have only got 5. As well.
Yeah, sorry, I'm saying we got 6, which is a game in hand on Luton. How are you feeling, Joe? Are we not going to start Googling through this one, are we, and getting more nervous?
I hope not. I mean, I'm much better after getting points like that on the board, particularly bonus points, I would say, in a game like that. But I think the worry came, because you were right to look through it in the midweek pod, because the kind of games that you'd normally be targeting, if we hadn't have changed manager, certainly we would have been talking about he's got to get results against Luton and Bournemouth and Forest. And because we didn't, you start to then go, you can see something building here, but is it going to all come together in time? Are we going to actually get points on the board in the handful of games that were like really on the there for us? You know, I'm thinking West Ham next week was one I was eyeing up more than Liverpool away. So that win is just an almighty lift, because it's 3 more points that the other teams have to all collectively get. Let's not forget, it's not just Luton that have to do that. I suppose there's a load of other teams in between us now that have also got to match their record, essentially. So it gives an almighty sigh of relief and actually provides a little bit of promise going into some more of these games in the run-in, that we are capable of closing out games, even with, again, I feel like, because we're going to offer so much praise to players in 3-2-1 and things like that. Just to reiterate, Anderson alongside Jefferson Lerma and Nathaniel Klein, and we got our first clean sheet in, I cannot tell you when. So it can be done.
Since Glasner's first game. Guessing,
yeah.
Burnley.
Right, yeah. Might be, yes. It was like 10 games ago, 11 games ago.
And given that we didn't actually play against a team that day, it probably doesn't even count for much.
Yeah.
But yes, in terms of a legit clean sheet, you're probably going back to, I don't know when.
Bodo Glimt. Big clean sheet.
Millwall behind closed doors, Danny, not the scores. Yeah.
Before that, actually, it's, oh my word, it's, well, the cup game, looks like we drew in the cup.
Yeah, Everton.
Everton 0-0. Yeah. But before that in the league, it hit Burnley away.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. So Burnley was the answer then.
Yeah, just, that's crazy. What's the last Burnley-less clean sheet in the league? It must be going into sort of September or August or something.
Probably that United. Probably the...
Yeah, probably. Oh, my gosh.
September, yeah.
Wow, that does make that clean sheet all the more impressive given the personnel. I mean, if you're James Tompkins, you're sitting there thinking, oh, there's no way I'm playing for this manager ever again. But it is very impressive. And they were, yes, they had big chances and there was some miracle blocks and saves. But that 3, particularly the 2 out of position, were very good.
Well, Lerma's looked really good since he went there against Bournemouth. For the 3 of us saw that live and he did look very, very competent there and had done it for Bournemouth previously and for Columbia. But as Joe said in the first part, the need for Nathaniel Klein to come in, I don't know if that was a little bit more pace in the back line given the threat of the Liverpool pose, or maybe Wardy was carrying an injury because he'd done relatively okay in that position. But yeah, as Joe says, that back 3 to get the clean sheet relied on some incredible leadership from Joachim Andersen. And we don't want to spill into 3-2-1. I thought Joachim Andersen was absolutely sensational.
Back to his best, I think.
Absolutely right. Yeah, he was quality. But Lerma and Klein did well. And you've got to say, not just Klein, but Klein is playing alongside Munoz, who, for all the waxing lyrical we've done of him over the last few months, he's still less than 3 months into a new league and new country. I don't know what his English is like, but you know the communication there may have been frayed at points as well. But no, really, really, really good. The goalkeeper, all the criticism that went his way when he first joined, I think we can probably sweep under the carpet and pretend that never happened now. But yeah, really, really positive. In terms of relegation, you know, we did start crunching the numbers last week and it was a little bit more panic-inducing after Luton's win. But then you see Luton, you know, rightly get thumped at City, as a lot of teams will be. And I mentioned last week the goal difference was starting to narrow. Well, that goal difference is now 7.
Yeah,
and that's 7 and Luton have 5 games left. So are they going to win games to kind of bridge the gap and kind of fill that that goal difference void? I don't know. But as Joe says, there's Forest, Everton and Brentford between us and them anyway. So I think that goes a really long way. The hope is the momentum that a result and performance like yesterday will build, the confidence it will bring, bleed into West Ham on Sunday, Newcastle the following Wednesday, you know, Fulham away, Wolves at home. They're games that when you win Anfield, you start to think, come on in, let's have it all. You know, you start looking at trains for Wolves, as I've been doing this afternoon. No, it's all good. You start thinking about it and you start thinking, yeah, we'll take on anyone that wants to have a go. I think you have to be positive about our chances of staying in. I think the statistical models had us before that result yesterday at around 2.83% chance of going down.
Very specific, love that.
Yeah, well, I think that's what I saw. You'd imagine after yesterday that's reduced further.
Must be.
So, yeah. So I think, you know, the positives in terms of where we are this season is there for all to see. But that type of performance yesterday with a new manager, given that Glasner is 8 or 9 games into his spell as Palace manager, it really does kind of look good for the preseason, albeit there are a lot of questions that we'll need answering this preseason. But today's not the pod for it.
No, there'll be plenty more opportunities to do that. Just on the back three, MK says, was our defence made of bulletproof Glasner today? Very good. Jamie, Princeton, Raja, 3 at the back, but only one of them a centre-back. Is this Glasner ball? Let's hope it's not Glasner ball. Henderson deserves some praise. George was young, says, has Henderson sold his soul to the devil? If so, thanks, man. Very blase. But he was excellent, wasn't he, Joe? And I said this to Selzy and Selzy Monday. I hope this kind of puts to bed the whole Henderson versus Johnson thing. They're two excellent goalkeepers, international standard. Whoever plays, they're probably going to be okay. They both have their flaws, but we haven't, and he said this, Selzy, we haven't really been in a position that before where we had two strong choices. I think we just got to put this one to bed and enjoy both of them.
Yeah, and also, I think more sort of short-term assessment of that, we've only got one of them available, so why put ourselves through the... You can't drop Dean Henderson now for Sam Johnston because Sam Johnston's out, so just forget about it. Just get behind him. And that was another performance where, you know, if you're super harsh, you say, you know, there were some big chances that were straight at him. You could equally say he was there. So I think the Darwin Nunez stop is one that, you know, if it's any... If he's almost hit it too well, Clive, that kind of situation. But the first half chance from Diaz with the kind of acrobatics, there's a really, really incredible, like, instinctive sort of flap away, but also actually kind of controlling, making sure it's going away from the goal and out of play rather than straight back where it came from. And he seems confident enough. I know I think he's even done some interviews after the game talking about he's not had the greatest year and his confidence. He's not the player he thinks he should be. But I still really think, in terms of, like, if someone's charging down on goal or when there's a set piece, he puts himself about a bit. I'm more than happy with him as a Palace goalie. And we said it would just take big games, big moments, and suddenly everyone would shut up. And that was very much a big game with a few big moments. So, yeah, I don't know what else people were waiting on. You can't hold that price tag millstone on him. He's our number one until at least the end of the season now. And he's helped get us 3 points over the line there.
That is a standard price tag these days. I mean, we paid the same for Adam Wharton, and I know it's a different position, younger player, and that's looking like an absolute bargain.
But Burnley spent £21 million on James Trafford.
Yeah.
And they've dropped him.
I know he's younger. Exactly. They dropped him
for a goalkeeper that's just like giving strikers, giving other teams goals.
I don't want to allege match fixing, but that guy, that's 2 weeks in a row where isn't looking.
And that's really unfortunate, but they are, yeah, bad moments.
Some shockers. But no, I think Henderson is clearly a guy who plays better. I've said this before, I'm repeating myself on story listener, but he clearly backs himself. So with performances like yesterday and experiences like yesterday, there's a great moment with a proper embrace with Yoa. And I was like, yeah, this is a guy feeling himself. Now he feels not just great himself, he's feeling part of this.
Okay, yeah.
And that's a big part. And you just have to see his celebration at the end. And you know, the photographer Seb took some great shots of him. And some lovely pictures released by the club. It meant a huge amount to him personally, but probably more as a Palace goalkeeper.
There was a great shot of Klopp walking past, and Klopp's normally doing his fist pump to the cop, and he's looking down the other end, and Henderson's doing a fist pump to the Anfield Road stand he went in. So good. So good. So many good moments just of this.
What do you think was his best save, Jim? What was your takeaway from yesterday?
I actually think the Diaz one is really underrated, because that's a very awkward movement to do. And you've seen so many of those sneak in where the keeper hasn't got there quick enough and got his hand up. And anything up or low is obviously harder for a goalkeeper. There was quite a few that were at him. You know, Nunes in the first half put one at him from further out. The one, the Nunes one that's basically a replica of the Mateta one down the other end. I think keepers are just told to be large when it's that close, be large and see what happens. And so that's not as skillful, I think, as the Diaz one. But I just think it was a very confident display. And I think similar to his display at the Etihad earlier in the season, I think this is a man that exudes confidence. And that is only a good thing for a goalkeeper. And it spreads into the back four, or back five as it was this time. And there's so many good performances there. I want to touch on Tyrone Mitchell really quickly, because he's been obviously a subject for us. But before we do that, a couple of questions on Lerma. Charlinho says, is Lerma the new Checo Chiarte, going from midfield to centre back and playing well? Finn Pal Freeman says, does Richards get back in over Lerma? Almost certainly does, Joe, surely. And then Lerma goes back into midfield, you'd have thought?
Perhaps in the short term. It was a question I was going to ask you guys myself. If this kind of form continues, because I guess part of the really solid display across the defence on Sunday is the kind of relationship between the centre-backs on the outside of the trio and their full-backs. So Klein and Munoz having this kind of relationship going almost like good cop, bad cop with Diaz. And then on the left-hand side, Mitchell and Lerma did an absolute job on Mo Salah. I don't think you can give sole credit to either of them. I think collectively it was like a dual effort from them, and it was really impressive. And if that is something we see moving forward and may have to see, looking beyond the end of the season, if Glasner wants to play this system, and let's say Shep Decore doesn't leave in the summer because of this injury, if we start next season with Decore and Wharton, where is Jefferson Lerma? Is it worth putting him into that back three? I'm sure there's Dougie Freeman running the numbers going, we'll save X amount by doing that. Yeah, let's absolutely do that. But it's a lovely problem to have. We've got a million centre-backs, and they all seem to be injured all the time. So he will be called upon there. I'm delighted that it's played out the way it has for him, because it could have very easily been, well, we've seen what's happened with a midfielder in the back three, another one at Bournemouth. That's not to put any criticism towards Ozo. I think that was just a bit of inexperience, and just these things happen. Mm-hmm. But Lerma's really, really stepped up to the plate in that position over the last sort of 10 days. And I just, I'm not mad if we see more of him there. And given what squad we may have after the summer, he may well want to have an extra position that he can call his own so that he can get a place in the side if he wants to play every week.
So amazing, Jack, isn't it? How long a week is in football? How many changes? Because the way we're talking about these players now, not that Lerma hasn't done well in that position. And actually, Joe's right. In my head, I keep thinking there's three midfield spots. There aren't. There's two centre midfield spots.
Do now. Lerma is doing very well. We've seen this in midfield. He's incredible in the air. Like he really will, outjump anyone. I know Liverpool's threat isn't aerial, but you know he was dominant yesterday. Really, really good. And as you both say, I think if he can offer positions at two positions in the team, comfortable starting in either. It's good for us. It's good for him. I really like. I like his character. Just everything about him. I just think it's a really, really good signing, and has looked a better signing with every, even through the trials of this season. The signing of him has never been in question. And I think that shows the quality of that signing. That no one's ever said, "Oh, and what about Lerman? That was a waste of time." But he's just been great since he's joined, and really, really pleased for him. He probably will miss out on 3-2-1 because there's so many candidates, but he's definitely a contender.
Of which he will be gutted, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they break the news to him gently.
Yeah. Beyond that, do you think he's in the running for Player of the Year?
I think he has to probably. Be, yeah. I think it's between him and Mateta in terms of the players. If the players are voting, I think that's the way it worked for Cheick Doucouré last year. If we're talking about that award, I think players that have been consistently available throughout the season.
Yeah.
Can't really think of any others other than Lerma. Mateta, maybe Jordan Ayew to some degree, but
yeah, in terms of post-AFCON, isn't he?
Yeah, post-AFCON he struggled, and I'm not sure the new manager fancies him as much as Roy did. Oh, sorry, Jim, that's a pound to the Palace of Life Foundation.
Yeah,
sorry. But yeah, I think he probably is in the running. But yeah, 3-2-1's the one that he's really bothered about, Joe. That's what I heard.
I mean, every Wednesday morning, they're always in the training ground changing room, aren't they, talking about, who heard of 3-2-1?
Tres Dos Uno.
It's pinned up on the wall in the changing room.
That's what we're doing it for.
Yeah.
I think between now and the end of the season, we might see, if Richards does come back, Mark Gay comes back, we might see Lerma go back in the middle, and then we've still got Will Hughes to come on and do what he's been doing well for the last half an hour if we need him to. It's amazing to have options all of a sudden.
I know. We spent the last year or so talking about how we don't have options. I was just thinking there, did Henderson arrive in the summer? Was Henderson the summer signing?
Yeah.
But this season, we signed Henderson, Lerma, Wharton and Munoz. I mean, it's arguably...
Rob Holding.
And Rob Holding. Nashville's own.
Matthijs Franzen, who...
Yeah.
We were talking yesterday, my brother and I, about Franzen. He's just kind of been forgotten a little bit because he's just not been available, and that has just removed the prospects of... the will he won't he play conversation. But that's another positive of the summer. You know, he will have had a year in London, year in and around the squad, Andy Townsend. And I think that's another positive. The manager will want to give a proper look at him in the summer. So, yeah, it's amazing what a win at Anfield on a Sunday will do for Palace discourse.
Indeed. Before we go to 3-2-1 then, which we have been teasing a lot this episode, I'm sure people have sort of fast-forwarding through.
People were texting me about 3-2-1 this
really?
Week.
Really? Wow. We've created something, haven't we?
Amazing.
Yeah, love it. Tariq Mitchell, brilliant performance, and we've touched on that earlier. Very much Joe playing in a position that we've debated whether he has the ability to play in. We know it's slightly out of position for him, but he was excellent on Sunday, got the assist. PC Wires says, was that Mitchell's best performance in a Palace shirt? And I'll just tag on the other question from Graham Cook, and I don't know if he's serious, he might be, I don't know. Does Mitchell deserve to go to the Euros? So, Joe, I'll give you both those questions.
The options down England's left side are dwindling. And I think Southgate's, you know, instinct to deal with that has been put some right backs there. We're running out of the right backs to do so as well. Kieran Trippier was the normal kind of cover over there. He's not going to be fit. And now you look at Chilwell, looks so rusty, incredibly rusty. And I don't think you want rusty Chilwell or rusty Luke Shaw going into the Euros.
That just sounds really rusty.
Chilwell.
Rusty Chilwell. Don't Google that.
Vaudeville acts from the 50s.
Yeah.
Don't Google that.
But then the options are sort of Rico Lewis or Tyrick Mitchell. Really, there's in terms of left side regulars, there was a lot of clamour for Rico Henry before he got injured. It was after a Wolves win under Vieira, one of the most impressive away performances I've seen from us. It was immediately followed by a call up of Gray, Gallagher, Mitchell.
Was that the game?
That's the game where I get carried away and do those t-shirts with Tom Dutton does the logo with the three lions and then three.
Yeah, nice.
I do the runner really tees. Nice. And he's not had a look in since that. I think he got two or three caps and then that's
two.
It.
He started one and came on in the other one. I can't remember which way round.
He started against the Ivory Coast at home. Because I went to
against Switzerland.
Yeah, and but he's not really had a look in since. And I think performances like that, it's hard to justify. I think because of how he is defensively, particularly under previous management, he was probably allowed to not overexert himself in the other direction, and actually has not had to prove to anybody that what he can do at the end of the pitch. And it's probably what is holding him back at England level is probably, have we seen enough of him on the ball in forward areas helping out the winger? And I think Sunday was a great example of, yes, he can do it, because we now have a manager that's actually, it's telling him, go on, yeah, I need you up there. It's not can you, it's you need to. So, and it's getting him involved. It doesn't come to him all 100% naturally. I'm not going to lie to everyone. We've got our own eyes. There's certainly been hesitant in some games. It doesn't come in as natural as, say, Daniel Munoz does. But it doesn't mean he can't offer and contribute up there. And there you go. You've got an assist there for the winner at Anfield. So what more do you want from him? And that's on the byline. It's not like a Danny Butterfield style cross from deep. It's diagonal. No, he's on Liverpool's goal line, basically, or like on the end of the pitch. He's gone as far away from his defensive position as he can before laying it off. So I don't know.
The nosebleed is happening as he's there.
Yeah, so it was tough for him.
I am too. And I think actually he's one of those players actually that I think a lot of players divide people. I think he's one where everyone wants him to do well. Such a nice lad, come through the academy.
What's it? How much money has he saved us over the last 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, well, in the same way, you know, Aaron did and then made us money as well. Yeah. But he is, Jack, isn't he? For intents and purposes, the exact opposite of Daniel Munoz in style of play. The exact opposite. Everything he does is so measured and thought out. And I think that's why he looks like the sort of player that maybe doesn't function so well going forward. But actually, everything's very precise with him. And given the opportunities to then do that in the final third, actually could be quite profitable.
I'm really pleased because I actually thought his whole 90 minutes yesterday was really good. Funnily enough, in the same half of the pitch, in the first half he was really good going forward, and the second half he was outstanding defensively. Because there have been games this season where I've questioned his, not his role in the team, because that's unquestioned, because there is no kind of counter option to Tari Mitchell. But in terms of the form, sometimes he's looked a little bit slack and then has improved as game's gone on, or he's dropped off in a game. I felt at Bournemouth a couple of weeks back, he had quite a tough second half. But it was really good to see him play at the level he did yesterday. And now, Michael Olise doesn't waste passes, particularly in the final third. So for him to trust Tyreek Mitchell with the ball when he plays it into him on the overlap says that the players around him know that he's got it in him. And the ball into Eze was, I know it looks very simple from a kind of armchair, but or from anywhere in a football ground, but that's a wonderfully placed pass through legs into space. And Ebbs has the lovely task of tucking it away. But yeah, in answer to Joe's question, how much has he saved us? Millions, because otherwise we'd have to go out and get a player that's you know, versatile to play left back and then into a different position now under a new manager. So yeah, I'm really pleased for him. I think this Euros might come a bit too soon for him. I don't think Southgate will take him, but I think after a full pre-season of this new manager going into next season, if he carries on with performances like yesterday, then he will grab attention from the England manager. But I don't think he'll be the surprise England call-up into this Euro squad. That's not to say I don't think there will be one, Jim.
Sorry, you don't. There's too many negatives there. You do or don't think there will
be one? Come on. JD gave his very bold prediction that Mitchell would get a mention in 3-2-1. So what's your prediction?
Request a bet. Adam Walton on the plane to Germany.
Oh, what were the odds, good sir?
No idea, But if they're listening,
okay.
Forest Holidays is the answer.
Yeah.
It's a little. It'll be a trip somewhere. To Berlin.
If
Kobi Mainoo, and I get that he's a wonderful talent, but if he's getting the hype he's getting, then as a Palace fan, I'm gonna stick Adam Walton's name in the conversation.
Well, the golden rule is always you've got to take one out if you put one in. And I think Calvin Phillips has taken himself out.
So, yeah.
And then maybe Jordan Henderson doesn't go. Who knows? Or somebody else.
That's two players that Southgate, without turning it into an England pod, Southgate banks on, you know, despite club form or whatever. They could be playing Sunday League and he'd still pick them, yeah. I think. So
I don't want to say too much about Adam Walton because I'm sure it'll come up in a minute, but it is a real shame that the kind of genie's out of the bottle with him. The fact that Shearer and Lineker are already talking about him on The Rest Is Football.
Yeah.
That Jamie Redknapp's already called him a top player. It's not good.
Wait, but not a top player?
Not a top player. That's to come. Okay. And he hasn't endorsed him with a Sandbanks jacket yet. But I'm sure that time will come.
Well, he'll a pair of sketches. But he'll get that pair of sketches at some point.
Pair of sketches and a Sandbanks jacket.
No signed sketches.
He's not Redknapp verified just yet, but I'm sure it's coming. I love that. The Redknapp scale. Top player. Top player.
Terrific.
Terrific. Terrific. No, his dad's still got that train. Do you think he'll inherit Terrific from his dad? Is that like a...
It's rude not to, I think. I think he should take it off him. God. Since you've two made big predictions, I think I might have said it before, but I'm going to double down because it hasn't happened yet. I still think one of Mitchell or Munoz will score between now and the end of the season.
Oh, yeah, that'd be lovely.
Oh, yeah. I'd be happy for it. I'd be delighted for Tyreek, but I'd be happy for either. I'd say out of those predictions, mine was probably the weakest. But anyway, we'll see if it comes true in a minute. After this short break, we'll play 3-2-1. Welcome back to the FYP podcast, sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Before we get into 3-2-1, a quick update, Jack, on the Crystal Palace women's team, who did win their game in hand over Birmingham 1-0. I watched the highlights. Nice goal from Hughes at the near post, pokes it in. Slightly strange game. I don't know if you've seen the highlights. Birmingham's Moore got sent off for the weirdest second yellow you'll ever see, giving away, having already been booked early on for a late foul, giving away a handball as Palace were on the break, but in Birmingham's half. It was very, very strange, a bit of a sort of head loss moment. But Palace hung on, actually missed a penalty late on as well, which could have made it 2-0. Big wins, and now 2 points clear of Sunderland, with both teams in 2 games to go. Those two games...
2 points clear with a massive goal difference.
And a massive, okay, so effectively 3, but 2 points. And then it's Lewis away this Sunday, which unfortunately does clash with the men's team. And then Sunderland at home at Selhurst. The Selhurst showdown, as Palace have been promoting it, could well be a shootout for the title, assuming both teams are going to win their games this weekend. We're on the verge of, I mean, firstly, great day for Palace all round.
Great Sunday. Great
what
Sunday.
A Sunday. Sundays in April, we just can't beat them. But we'll be on the verge of, you know, I've got a desk here, so I'm sort of touching wood. But, you know, it could be on the verge of the first time ever having a men and women's team in the top flight of English football, which would be absolutely huge for this club. And if you're talking about, I know a lot of fans question kind of progress of Crystal Palace over the last 10 years in terms of getting into Europe and all that kind of stuff. But if you're looking 10 years back and you said in 10 years' time we'll have a new £20 million academy that is churning out players for the first team, be on the verge of breaking ground on the new main stand. I know that seems to be going on forever, but hopefully that's not too far away. And then a women's team in the WSL, I would say that's huge progress.
It would be a huge club-wide kind of journey, wouldn't it? And, I don't want to talk too soon because, you know, two huge games between the team and promotion, but a game in hand often weighs very heavily, and the fact they've been so consistent in, you know, hammering teams to nil previously, I think yesterday's 1-0, albeit, Jim, I know you mentioned the missed penalty, it was a nervier afternoon than many fans would have wanted. So to get over the line, to be top of the table with two games to go is just fantastic. And yeah, big game on Sunday at Lewis. I know it's Lewis's last home game of the season across their men and women's team. And I spoke to someone at the club not too long ago, and they're planning a big day. It's a huge shame it is now clashing with the men's fixture, but I'm sure there will be plenty of Palace fans who'll be making the trip to Sussex rather than go to the men's game, and rightly so if they followed the women's team throughout this season. But yeah, if you are, the Dripping Pan is a lovely ground, so enjoy it. But
it's a great ground. Best name. Best named ground in the
best UK. Name and a fair few good boozers not too far from, one of which Joe and I frequented before the Brighton game. So it's a big game, but yeah, fingers crossed they do what they need to on Sunday, and then it's all guns ahead towards all guns ahead, is that a phrase? All roads ahead to last day of the season at home to Sunderland.
All Guns Ahead sounds like a sort of fifth-rate Arsenal podcast that you'd only listen to if you listen to all the other Arsenal podcasts and you've got nothing else to do. Birmingham did miss a big chance early on. Smith apparently was who sort of put it over the bar. But Joe, I'm looking through the results and they've just like got things done in that way that sort of, I don't want to say the C word, but like in the way that champions sort of do, they've just cracked on being very consistent. They've got a really good group of players there. It's a very exciting time. Whatever happens, and I said this to Belly at the weekend after the end of the Liverpool game, the men's team, whatever happened on Sunday, there was a lot for us to be proud of in that performance. I think with the women's team, whatever happens now in the last two games, there's still a hell of a lot to be proud of in that squad.
Definitely. And it was funny, that list of things you were saying prior to what Jack was saying about the things to look positive about in terms of Palace's progress as a club generally. You know, there are a lot of, particularly towards the end of the last management spell, and there were all these questions about ownership and the tussles we don't see behind the scenes and the conflict there and how that's affecting everything. You're trying to look for wins that just think, what do we do this for? What's the beyond the kind of meeting your friends at match day? What else is there to be proud of right now for the club to hang its hat on? And I think the club was probably looking for that as much as we were. And I feel like the women's side's performance this season has probably surprised everybody, given the kind of budgets of play and some of the other teams there. Mm. It's a huge moment for them, and great progress made regardless. If they go on and do it, it's incredible. And suddenly you're looking at, as you say, as Sellers turns 100, you're going to have WSL football there. You're going to have Palace and the men's side in the top flight in the Premier League for a record, like 11th, 12th straight year. At this point, I'm losing count. That's not me saying that for fun. I'm genuinely, that's how long we've been up there now. And yeah, maybe the ground finally gets its improvements this summer. I'm choosing to stay positive on that. It's suddenly the sun's coming up again. To sort of almost paraphrase Steve Parrish about, the sun is coming up again, Palace fans.
it'll be Joe Walker on the pitch on the last day of the season this year.
Yes, yeah.
That was a tweet, wasn't it, rather than an end of season declaration from Steve.
Yeah, it was a tweet. I think someone said, well, what happens if players get injured and da, da, da. And then lo and behold, those players did get injured. But hey, that's why he earns the big bucks. I'll happily do it on the pitch for 1% of his increase on the accounts.
Oh my. Not the week to go down that alley, boy.
No, it's been a positive pod. I won't swim in that slop.
Steve, if you're listening and would like to come on the FYP podcast, please do.
It's been a while, actually. It's been 26 years.
Come on, old friend.
6 years.
Come on.
Let's get him back on.
To give him some hate, the small print of that salary increase was that it was unpaid bonuses to him from something else that was now just being kind of given to him on the back end. So all can be shoot away. It's not a problem.
All money's monopoly money. It doesn't matter.
It's one Nathan Ferguson.
It's one Nathan Ferguson.
God, you guys have got to stop giving me so many potential titles this week.
I've already got
three written down.
We cannot call a post win at Liverpool one Nathan Ferguson. There's contextless pod titles. That one would just be a stretch.
The three I've got currently, I was going to ask at the end, the three I've got currently are Ready to Be Hurt, but I feel that's more for a defeat. Google that, which I think is quite strong. But my favourite, I think, is The Sun is Coming Up Again, because that is such a strong reference to something that happened a long time ago that every Palace fan will immediately understand. Should we move on to 3-1?
Yeah, but just best of luck to the women's team this Sunday.
Yeah, and Laura Kaminski has been a fantastic manager there, and whatever happens, we're proud of that team. Berating Badger has said good luck with 3-2-1, maybe start from 11. Right. Oh,
that would be a good part. I wouldn't want to give anyone the one.
No, you wouldn't.
Full 11.
Give anyone the one. You wouldn't. You'd want to split it. Well, what would that be? That'd be like 50 points. Oh, whatever. Math is not my strong point. Before we go into it, so Mateta is on 23, Lerma's on 15, so he's 8 points clear. Elise, Eze, Anderson and Wharton.
He's got an eight-point gap. So I know I've been here most weeks, but that is
You've been giving him those points.
To be fair, I don't think this is the week where that lead extends. And that's not to criticize him. That's just an endorsement of what everyone else did on Sunday.
I think you're right. I think it gets more.
This is where the pressure's really going to tell for JP, because he's really got to go some to get these points between now and the end of the season. Because we need a narrative going into the last week.
Yeah, we do. Otherwise, I'm straight down Timpson's the week before.
He's getting that before the United game, 2 weeks before the end of the season.
Yeah. Joe, let's come to you first then. Come on.
Oh,
I know. Sorry. We got to pick three.
Okay. I'm going to go for Adam Wharton. He didn't do the 90, did he? Wait.
Yeah.
I think
he did. Come off.
He did the 90. He
come off,
yeah.
He come off
yeah.
the pitch.
Seconds, and, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's 97 minutes for a player that had been kind of carefully managed into full fitness and won so many challenges. He's not, I don't mean that's the first thing you talk about him when you're describing him as a player. It's about his weight of pass, the passes he picks. He was giving the Liverpool midfield real problems in both directions for most of the game, and that's ridiculous for a 20-year-old to be to that first half, especially to be playing in. So much of our good passing play was through him, and I just think that's mad. You know, we're talking 10, 11 appearances, if that, so far at the Palace, and we did say in weeks past, when he is then able to complete games, what a prospect that is in store for us. We're already looking like we're getting there, and I think everyone is suddenly going to be very worried playing against him. Jack, as you said, the genie's out of the bottle. I think he's now going to be a topic of conversation. Teams are going to look out for him. Pundits, players, fans are going to look out for him. And I don't think it's beyond him to take that pressure and just play accordingly. Because you think even when we signed him, it was the sort of highlight packages and things of have a look at this player. It was playing against Chelsea in a cup. So it wasn't like he had not played at this against good players before. But to be that dominant and controlling at Anfield in a run-in is so impressive at his age. And he was trending online for a reason. I think the Premier League fan, the viewership of all know who he is now. If they didn't via the game against Chelsea, where he was very impressive. If they weren't from that, I think that performance at Anfield is gonna have. It's another great catch by Crystal Palace. How did they find him? Well, just like anyone else with common sense, we looked in probably the best second tier in the world. But I don't know why other clubs don't do it. But here we are, we've done it, and we are benefiting from taking the risk in January rather than waiting till the summer and paying a little bit more, I don't know, than we would have liked. But we're not selling him for 18. We're not going to be selling him for 18 million, are we? Yeah. Let's put it that way.
He's got a bit of everything, hasn't he? I'm really quickly just going to name check Chris Wright, Rich Bragg, and Aaron Thundo. Great name. Rob Lewis and Alex Burt, and probably many more who are just sending questions about how good Wharton is. He's got everything. He's so young. He's very confident. Yeah, the genie's out of the bottle, but it was going to be at some point because he was going to play a televised game against a top three team at some point and put in that kind of performance. He's consistent. I think we've got a real gem here.
Top right. I mean, in some ways, football's a game of chance, and who's to say that he would have got these minutes if the situation of this season hadn't kind of rolled out the way it has. But since he's come into the team, he's just looks so comfortable and looks better week in, week out. Just some of the stats from yesterday, 8 out of 10 duels won, 3 clearances, 1 interception, 6 tackles. So, you know, we're praising him in terms of his ability on the ball and his calmness, finding colleagues throughout the pitch. He's got a lovely way to pass, but as Joe says, he's now mixing it in terms of physically. And he was another one that was picked out by, I think, Shay Given on Match of the Day 2 last night. So, the coverage that's going his way is well-earned. It's a bit of a worry. I've seen Alan Nixon's already talking about what sell-on fee Blackburn Rovers have. So, you know, that will come with performances like that, though. People will be interested to know. But, you know, if Blackburn do get £15 million when we sell them for 100, then... You know, so be it. It's all good. I just like everything about him. I've said I'm just really pleased Joe's picked him, because otherwise I think he was going to put a restraining order on me, because each week I'm talking about him.
Joel is going to be for 3 minutes.
Look, Joel, you better step up, mate, because yeah, my eyes are wandering. Let's just go that way. delighted with that signing. He's had more minutes than I anticipated that he would have between now and the end of the season by actually dominating Premier League midfield, which is, you know, beyond any Palace fans' expectation of him.
Yeah.
Really, really pleased. The prospect of him and Decore next season is one that is really exciting. He's still 20 in a couple of months. So great piece of business. I think Joe's exactly right. I think the club got it over the line because they knew that come the summer, the list of clubs at the door was going to be a long one. And despite Palace have been there the longest, who's to say whether we would have got it? So, you know, I know we went in with an initial bid of around 15. The fact that we gave Blackburn another 3.5 now looks a very good £3.5 million.
It's so funny, Jack. You mentioned Shay Given picking him out there. I've never seen it in my life on Match of the Day. They when they want to do a highlights package of a player, they'll do a zoom in on just them on the pitch, and then they'll show a few clips. They did it for about 6 Palace players.
It's a montage.
I could not believe it. They did a zoom in on Water, they did a zoom in on Mitchell, they did a zoom in on Klein, zoom in on Anderson, zoom in on Lerma, zoom in on Henderson for the goal, zoom in on Henderson. Yeah. I was like, and they all deserved it. That's what's good. This is going to be impossible now.
Yeah.
It's so good.
We're already writing our Twitter notes on the notes app to send our apologies to the players that we've not actually mentioned. No, I think he's great. I just think he's really good. And it's more points for him. I know this is a silly little thing that we do and some listeners will like it, but the fact that he is almost at the top of the table, having played 11 Premier League games, is
it's the perfect metric for all football fans to measure players' performance by, our 3-2-1 chart. Now, he's a real joy to watch. And we don't normally get midfielders signed for Palace that are as technically, obviously, we've seen how defensively good he is, and that was a surprise, I think. But technically that good. We normally get players who are good defensively first, and then anything else on top as a bonus. But he can do it all. I mean, and he wears his socks rolled down. I mean,
you love that. You can't get past that. Can I just kind of echo my pat on the back to Will Hughes, though? Because I do think playing next to a steady head like Will Hughes is probably helping him. I was going to say veteran. I mean, I think Will Hughes is still on the better side of 30. So, he's a baby by comparison to us and some listeners. But
I think he's 28,
He's 28. Like, you know, he's been around for a long, long time. But I think he is probably helping. And Will Hughes is probably doing some of the dirtier work for Wharton to maybe not be in more congested parts of the pitch. But Wharton is rightly taking the headlines because his performances have been that good.
Do you give him any credit for putting off Curtis Jones and that chance?
A lot of players, a little bit like Tyreek Mitchell following Salah in for that chance, which we didn't mention when we talked about Ty a minute ago. Mm. Some players do give up on those moments because you're thinking, oh God, the cop, you know, everything. It's you've seen it, and you wouldn't blame them if Wharton had dropped off the intensity and Mitchell hadn't followed them in. But that was part of yesterday. Palace players saw it all the way through. You know, that Mitchell block. Actually. Yeah, that was a great example of Wharton tracking him back when actually he was probably knackered. Probably didn't want to be tracking back that deep. We broke, I think that was from our own corner, wasn't it, as well? So we're on the back foot. But there were some real elements of that kind of strong defensive instinct, and that was one of them. I probably blame Curtis Jones more for the miss than I give credit to Adam Wharton, though.
Yeah. Outside of the foot there, doesn't make any sense.
Shocker.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Who are we going to zoom in on next, then? Jack, you can have this one.
Our Danish beauty at the heart of the defence.
Yeah.
Don't think we've mentioned, I think come the start of the season, he was pretty much rocking and rolling at the top of the charts. And I can't remember the last time we mentioned him, maybe unfairly, but yesterday was a proper return to the form that we've seen from him at points in his Palace career. You know, I think PC Wise asked the previous part, was that Mitchell's best performance in the Palace shirt? I think you could argue that was Joachim Anderson's best performance in the Palace shirt yesterday. He was absolutely outstanding defensively, leadership. But the goal, there's some passes beforehand, but I think the goal and the forward momentum that we show that leads to that goal comes from a lovely switch of play from Joachim Anderson stepping into the middle of the pitch and knocking it left for Ty. So, yeah, Joachim Anderson for me, I just thought he was absolutely excellent.
I am looking at the list. Anderson did get 2 points. three pods ago, four pods ago. But before that, it was back to pod 498. So pods had a four at the start of them when he got
November time. Yeah.
He had a really good, strong start to the season. And it's nice to see him back, actually, because we all know what his qualities are. And we have talked a lot on this pod about what's kind of happened with Joa. But that was a reminder of the quality that he does have. And not just kind of, again, you know, technically we know he's good, but in terms of leadership, Joe, and he did have two players alongside him who were playing out of position. He was a real leader. I think he was captain, wasn't he, on the day?
Yeah,
he was. A real leader, always in the right place at the right time to make some crucial blocks, but I think really ran that defence from his captain position.
Yeah, I think the debate about whether he's willing to muck in and match the technical play on the ball with his defensive work, I think we put paid to that about a year ago, maybe even longer, certainly by the end of Vieira's first season. But in terms of like leadership qualities, I wouldn't have had him really high up the list. And he demonstrated so many facets of leadership in that game, in terms of leading by example, in terms of helping those out of position players through an almighty, like, exhausting Liverpool attack and just kind of relentless defensive performance. I'm happy. I'm delighted for him. And I think if you contrast full-time, I thought was very revealing. Obviously, if you like football, if you're playing in football, you're going to be delighted with that result. There's certain kind of the cameras, the Palace footage, or even the Sky footage, the sort of players it's zooming in on who are really kind of soaking up the away end. Dean Henderson, Mateta, and Joachim Anderson. And I think Joka especially, but all of those three players actually, I thought was really interesting, because they're all players that are probably, they've had some horrible stuff thrown directly at them by away crowds. And Mateta, for example, has always been one to actually stare down the away end. Even when we've got hammered, he'll always go right up and just kind of say sorry or whatever, but get met with some torrid stuff. Anderson, let's not forget Brighton away, and some of the other games. And the Emirates just before that. Was that just before that? I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
he was probably at the forefront of the kind of hostilities between fan and player, because he was actually taking it on the chin and trying to offer some counters. He was really enjoying himself at full time and really enjoying it with the away end. And it was just nice to see that kind of, just shaking that off, and, you know, the weight of so much misery that we've had this season just washed away with an epic performance and brilliant result. And yeah, I'm really happy for him. I'm happy for everyone. I think I've said that a lot on this episode already, but it's really great for someone like Anderson, who is quietly become, I think he's our only player that's played every game this season.
Is he?
Yeah, in the league.
Could well be.
And he certainly was when I saw a stat going around a few weeks back. And unless he's missed one that I've forgotten, he's one. I think I don't think he's played every minute, but he's certainly been in every, he's played every game. And
I feel like he's kind of been returning to his better form. I thought he was absolutely great against Bournemouth in very difficult conditions. I thought he managed Solanke really, really well. And it was really only when Bournemouth went up that Solanke kind of unshackled himself a little bit from Anderson's attentions that evening. But
Took some extra responsibility in that game, knowing, oh, Henderson can't do the kicks. Okay,
the kicking.
Let me just take that problem away, and when you need me, I'll be here. And we saw that outfield as well. It wasn't just backs to the wall. When the opportunity presented itself, particularly first half, there were some of those classic Anderson balls over onto the left-hand side, and it was a big part of our play in that first half.
I know in terms of centre-halves, the attentions in terms of suitors this summer, I know everyone's talking about Mark Gay having a list of suitors, but I just wonder, with Anderson with 2 years left on the contract, the age he is, if he's able to replicate that form from yesterday between now and the end of the season, have a good Euros with Denmark, I wonder whether his admirers will be at the door again, because that type of performance doesn't go unnoticed. And again, a bit like we're talking about Wharton, when the national media start to kind of hype someone up, then it is typically followed by transfer rumours, whether there's meaning to those transfer rumours or not.
Everything about yesterday made me think, God, I'd have loved a full season with Doucouré, Gay,
the only regret,
Eze, and Anderson. I mean, hey, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen this summer? But but let's just enjoy it sort of while we can.
And his hair looked fantastic yesterday as well.
He often sort of grows it out, doesn't he? But he's superb. Got that sort of hairline that even when he grows it out, it looks, yeah, annoyingly good.
Go on, Jim.
So one spot to go. I think
technically, you've got the worst job here because Joe and I are kind of picking with everyone. If you don't choose certain players, you're the one that you've cut some of these players that deserve
You're saying they're all rubbish.
Yeah, you're saying they were crap if you don't choose them.
Yeah, I'd like to qualify this by saying I agree. And all
you don't rate Michael Olise. You're mental. You're mental.
So basically, in the running is Henderson, Klein, Mitchell, Lerma,
and then Munoz. Will Hughes, Emre Chiesa, Michael Olise,
Jairo Riedewald.
Jairo Riedewald.
Jeffrey Schlapp.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go, we talked about it in the last part, I think I'm going to go Tyreek Mitchell. It's been a while since he's got any points. He's only on 3 points, and that's not why I'm giving it to him, but it was such a grown-up display from a player that I think we've questioned whether he fits into this system.
Grown up display from a guy who is 36 years old.
Gets the assist and is a player that's never really let us down, Tyreek. Always puts it, whether he's played well or not, always gives his all for Palace and has been asked to do some things he's not really been asked to do before this season. And he was excellent. And that's not to say that Lerma wasn't brilliant, because he was. And, you know, all these other players were great. But I think it's time to give Tyreek his first points since pod 5-11. And in fact, he's only ever got one each time. This might be a one again, but
we had a question when you put up the standings of 3-2-1 a couple of weeks ago. Somebody said Tyreek Mitchell's been done bad there because he probably deserves more points, and he probably does fall under the radar weeks when he does justify points because he's had a very consistent game, and maybe someone else has taken some points because they've had a good 10 minutes. But I think Tyreek's
got fewer points than Chetakore, who's.
He's not played since minutes. November 25th.
No. Yeah. Both goalkeepers, Jeffrey Schlupp, and he's got...
that is Ryan, outrageous.
And he's got the same number of points as Franca, Roy and Ray, and the Crystal Palace fans.
That is a disgrace.
So we should probably be giving him all three. I don't think he's going to get all three, but he definitely deserves to be on the board.
If you or we... don't give Tyreek Mitchell a mention after a performance like yesterday.
Yeah. What are we doing?
When else is he going to get a mention?
Yeah.
I mean, I think we have to say there are so many players that do. I thought Nathaniel Klein had a very good game. I think that's his first start this season. And he looked very, very good. And you know, God bless him, he lasted 75 minutes before having to go off with what looked like quite a painful cramp. So there are so many players that do deserve a mention. And you know, I hope listeners understand that we were limited, but everybody deserves points from yesterday. But Tyreek Mitchell, I think there's not much more to add from the previous part. I just thought really, really solid. And you know, we've had that famous win at Anfield, and Emre Chiesa and Michael Olise haven't got any points.
Unfortunately, the history books will show that we hate Tyreek Mitchell. Unfortunately, there'll be no context. When I put it out next week on Instagram, there's zero context. He will just be on what he's on. Let's split the points up. I think... Did we mention this earlier? Well, maybe it was off air. I think we're all leaning towards Yoa for three. Or what?
Yeah.
What are we thinking?
Go on.
Yeah. I think that's probably fair.
I want to give Tyreek two, personally, but I don't know if you guys have got Wharton in the number two spot.
Let's do it. He's got an assist and a clean sheet.
Yeah.
That might bump it up to two.
Yes.
Okay. Wharton's just flavour of the month.
Yeah.
I'm trying to dissuade suitors from... like queuing up.
Yeah, he's actually not that good.
Wharton. He's a bit...
he's overrated.
Yeah, I would say. So I think we've overpaid for him.
Yeah. Well, just say he's like... just lie and say he's Welsh or something. Just throw... say, oh, he's not worth... you know. Take the English tax off it. Yeah, not even worth it.
Yeah, so true. Yeah, oh no, he actually developed through Gothenburg. He's not actually, one of your homegrown players if you buy him. So yeah. Don't bother.
That's the first time Mitchell's got more than 1 point this season. Puts him level with Jeffrey Schlupp and Sam Johnson on 5. Anderson goes third on 14 points, one behind Lerma, and Wharton goes fourth to a point ahead of Eze and Olise.
It's a late charge.
It's a late charge indeed.
We barely mentioned them. It was lovely to have Ebbs and Elise on the pitch at the same
makes
time.
Makes a huge difference. They've been on the pitch, I think I heard the stat was they've been on the pitch, well, before the game, four times this season. And in those four games, at least one of them has scored. And that's obviously continued into the fifth game.
Mad. Mad stat.
Right. That's the end of 3-2-1. After the break, we're going to preview West Ham at home. Welcome back to the 5 Pound Podcast, sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. It's West Ham at home. Last season, this was a 4-3 thriller. Given the form of both teams, Joe, it could be again. What are we expecting from that? They're a weird team, West Ham, aren't they? And this will be, obviously, after their second leg against Bayer Leverkusen in the Europa League. What are we expecting?
I'm expecting, actually, a similar contest to that. I think we're even playing it at a similar time of the season. That was a settled and relaxed Palace performance, but in a positive match, not complacent, relaxed. But like we knew we were okay under Roy. We'd had a couple of quick wins on his return, and we were just able to. And I think everyone was fit that game. That was the Harback with Ebbs and Elise and IU up front, and we should have. I think we battered them really in that game. But it was set piece trouble. We conceded three from a corner, each three corners, and I think you're going to have something quite similar there. Off the sort of hangover of the Liverpool win, I think you're going to see the team go into that game really confident. Suddenly, you know, it's another game where Elise starts and we're actually maybe got a bit more to offer going forward. And I think that's going to certainly scare West Ham. I don't really think much of West Ham defensively, despite how good they've done in the Premier League this season, in terms of where they are on the table. I do think they can be got at, as we've proved sort of prior to, you know, where we played them before. But I do worry about the same old stuff with West Ham. They will dominate us at set pieces. You know, I've got a real worry about that. And they've got some slightly other players, you know, could have, so I don't think we've really been tested against yet.
Yeah.
That could be really, you know, he could have a field, certainly to keep our defence busy. So I think our best weapons, as we've seen now, is fight fire with fire. And, you know, maybe we won't be so chaotic against West Ham as we were against Liverpool in terms of trying to do everything in the first half. But if we are, I think West Ham would be more worried about us than they were a week ago. So, loving it. It's really exciting. I think West Ham have had a couple of injuries as well from their fixture. They didn't have a very good game against Fulham.
No. Bowen was out. I think Bowen probably out. Obviously they got good. Kudos has done very well. Paqueta is back from injury and is a good player as well. We know Ward-Prowse has got quality. I mean, literally scored from a corner last week. But they are a weird team, Jack, aren't they? I mean, I'm looking at their results. They've had some funny old results recently, but actually away from home, they do actually look weirdly more consistent than at home. They won at Wolves recently. They won at Everton. Some big results. And they are eighth in the table. They're a difficult team to predict, really. I think Joe's right. If we come out again all guns blazing that we have done recently, it could be a game where we do actually go two or three goals up. But if we don't, West Ham are the sort of team that I think could stretch us.
Good players. It'd be interesting to see what they do on Thursday. They're currently 2-0 down against Leverkusen in the Europa League. So be interesting to see whether Moyes goes chasing that one or whether he kind of mitigates risk of kind of incapacitating key players ahead of Sunday. But they are a funny bunch. They're one of the more interesting clubs to me in terms of fan bases and what they really want. You know, the kind of never-ending cries of Moyes out. I really don't know what the expectation of a typical West Ham fan is anymore in terms of, you know, comfortable mid-table season after season, won a European trophy last year, not playing the most unattractive football possible, got some wonderful players. I don't know what the expectation is for them, but yeah, they have travelled better than they've been at home recently. I think probably got lost a lot of people yesterday in the midst of the surprise wins at Anfield and the Emirates for us and Villa, that they got rolled over quite easily by Fulham.
Yeah.
Was it Fulham 2-0?
Yeah, I think so. 7-0
aggregate. Oh, well, of course. Yeah, they got thumped there, didn't they? Yeah. So it's a funny thing. You don't really know which West Ham team you're going to get. But as you both say, they've got some lovely players. They will pose a threat. Kudos has been impressive in parts of the season. But Paqueta is really the star turn. It'll be interesting to see whether they can keep hold of him this summer.
I think they've got him sort of almost playing out of position at the moment because of Bowen's injury. I think they've almost pushed Paqueta a little wider. They started Antonio and Danny Ings against Fulham, and it's just very kind of suddenly start all the square peg stuff. And that's from speaking to my brother-in-law's West Ham, and that's, he says, as soon as kind of one element of their best side is taken out, it starts to become a little bit strange in terms of how they line up. And
yeah,
that is very strange, because that's a world, probably not far from world class midfield. You look at the likes of Paqueta and Kudos, and is it Alvarez? They're the midfielder.
The Mexican midfielder. Yeah.
And then that's a championship forward line in Antonio and Ings.
Championship forward line, both on six figures per week, though, Jim. That's the thing with both those two.
The dream. Yeah.
Yeah.
And still, both probably 6 months ago, we'd have all gone, I'd have him at Palace.
I think a listener could very easily go back to January and find me advocating we signed Danny Ings on loan. So
100%.
Yeah. I'm not going to admonish myself of that one. I just think we could roll them over 3-0, or they could roll us over 3-0 on Sunday. It's really odd. We're obviously going into it a lot more positively minded than we would have done after Sunday. But yeah, funny old lot. I mean, the best thing about West Ham this weekend was the stag do in Leeds, walking around in Kurt Zouma kits while the stag was dressed as a cat. And then a later video was them pretending to vandalise the Catch Protection League charity shop in Leeds town centre. So, yeah, probably the best thing about West Ham fans this weekend.
Bunch. They're a funny bunch, aren't they?
Funny bunch.
And I don't mean funny ha-ha. I mean the other kind of funny.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't want to say pressure's off after the Anfield game, because it's not, obviously, because nothing's secured. But I think it does mean that whatever happens on Sunday, if we see Palace come and go for it and try and play football in the way they have been under Glasner, whatever happens, I think we'll come away from the game, most Palace fans, slightly less worried than they would have done.
What,
maybe more appreciative that we're trying to see this system being put into play.
Well, we're Sunday, aren't we? Sunday, 3 o'clock. So you look at the fixtures before then. Luton have got Brentford at home. So if Luton win that, they drag Brentford close to them. If Brentford win that, Luton are four games left with a significant points gap. Sheffield United play Burnley. I think at least Sheffield United could be relegated if they lose that one. Mm. Everton play Forest.
Oh my God.
At 1:30, we could go for 3. So as we kind of go into Selhurst on Sunday afternoon, that'll be kind of midway point through the second half. So in terms of knowing our position as we go into that game live, we'll have an idea. But it's a big game this weekend. Biggest one for us, obviously, is Palace.
That is brutal. And actually, though, I'm quite relieved we're sort of not involved in any of those games. Slightly, we can just sort of crack on with... This Liverpool result has just been so big for so many reasons.
Just alleviates so much pressure.
Even if it's another point on the board Sunday rather than 3,
yeah,
that just, on top, having got that result at Anfield, it just removes us from this kind of scrap that everyone else below us is in. And
yeah,
you know, if it's all 1 point more than a couple of those teams are going. If they don't draw those games, I guess all of them. If they don't draw, let's say one of them loses, that means, and we get a point, we're getting even further and further away slowly from these teams. Like,
yeah,
at least 2-3 teams will hurt from us getting a point on Sunday. Yeah,
completely agree.
That's, anything more would be brilliant. But yeah,
it's a big, it's a survival Saturday slash Sunday, isn't it, really? I know that they normally brand that for the last weekend of the season, but this is a big weekend. So we will see what happens.
Jim, it's been an absolute pleasure talking over such a momentous result with you for the last hour and 20 or so, whatever it is. But every listener's asking for a status update regarding Brackers and the best man speech. Do you have one?
No, I don't have one. I completely forgot.
Sorry, listener. Thanks for staying tuned.
Sorry. No, I mean, I haven't even heard from him. So God knows what happened.
No news is good news?
I don't know. Who knows? If everyone knows where Edmund Brack is, do call in and we will track him down for next week. I'll text him now.
What would it be? It'd be like hour... If he's still doing it, it's probably like hour 49. And I was always told best man speeches should be longer than 10 minutes. So
I'm sure it went fine. Brackers is a very reliable individual, so I'm sure it was all...
I feel for him, though. You know, he's trundled up and down the country watching Palace, albeit it is in a professional capacity, and then he misses yesterday. I really hope he loves his brother. Hope his brother loves him.
What a note to end on. Guys, it's been lovely. Thank you so much for chatting through that. Thank you to our patrons, of course, for their support. Thank you to Green King Sport. There'll be more post-match content from West Ham at the weekend. But until then, I don't have to say this really, do I? But enjoy your week, Palace fans. Let's bask in the glory for a few more days before the next game is here. Take care, everyone, and we'll see you again soon. Goodbye. Podcast Network.